We honor the interdependent web of all existence. With reverence for the great web of life and with humility, we acknowledge our place in it. How do you feel about reverence? Why say reverence for the great web of life or reverence for the earth rather than like care or concern? The philosopher Paul Woodruff thinks of reverence as a forgotten value, he says, and he describes it this way. He says, reverence begins in a deep understanding of human limitations. From this grows the capacity to be in awe of whatever we believe lies outside our control: God, truth, justice, nature, even death. The capacity for awe, as it grows, brings with it the capacity for respecting fellow human beings, flaws and all. Simply put, reverence is the virtue that keeps human beings from trying to act like gods. We're probably all guilty of some hubris now and then. There are places and relationships in our lives where we know that we can wield more power than others, and we sometimes take advantage of that. But I wonder if understanding reverence as a virtue is quite right. I think of a virtue as something that I have. I wonder if I might think of it, reverence, as a practice. Reverence to me feels like something that I do, something that I could potentially get better at. Woodruff thinks that it's a natural mistake to think that reverence belongs to religion. It belongs rather to community. Except I would counter that the word religion, sharing the same root as ligament, is also about community and joining together and combining into one. Reverence is about nurturing connection based in openness, compassion, wonder, and awe with each other and the world. And we need to practice reverence for the web of life, for Earth. Rachel Carson, the marine biologist and environmentalist, understands reverence as a practice, I think, except she doesn't ever use the word reverence in anything that she's written, not that I've been able to find. Instead, what she did was in July of 1956, she had an essay published in the Women's Home Companion, and that essay was called Help Your Child to Wonder. It was later published as a book called The Sense of Wonder, and she starts the piece off describing about her relationship with her nephew, Roger. And she says, on one stormy autumn night, when my nephew Roger was about 20 months old, I wrapped him in a blanket and carried him down to the beach in the rainy darkness. A stormy autumn night, 20-month-old kid, down to the beach. Why are they going down? They're going to look for ghost crabs at the beach. Rachel Carson admits, it was hardly a conventional way to entertain one so young, I suppose. But now, with Roger a little past his fourth birthday, we are continuing that sharing of adventures in the world of nature that we began in his babyhood. And I think the results are good. The sharing includes nature in storm as well as calm, by night as well as by day, and is based on having fun together rather than on teaching. I'm going to let Rachel Carson go on for a little bit longer. She says this: we let Roger share our enjoyment of things people ordinarily deny children because they are inconvenient, interfering with bedtime, or involving wet clothing that has to be changed or mud that has to be cleaned off the rug. We have let him join us in the dark living room before the big picture window to watch the full moon riding lower and lower toward the far shore of the bay, setting all the water ablaze with silver flames and finding 1,000 diamonds in the rocks on the shore as the light strikes the flakes of mica embedded in them. I think we have felt that the memory of such a scene, photographed year after year by his child's mind, would mean more to him in manhood than the sleep he's losing. He told me it would, in his own way. When we had a full moon the night after his arrival last summer, he sat quietly on my lap for some time, watching the moon and the water and all the night sky, and he whispered, "I'm glad we came." This is learning to practice reverence. This practicing of wonder, this is a practice of reverence. And I think a practice like this can become a resource that we can draw on. I think that's what Rachel Carson is aiming for. She's looking for a resource that Roger can draw on for resilience, for wholeness. Carson talks about children having an innate sense of wonder that they can lose if it isn't nurtured. And maybe wonder is a sense, and our senses surely can be developed. I can't taste in wine what some other people can taste in wine, but I guess I could with some practice. But it's that active practice of something that I really am hearing in Carson's advice. What's part of the practice? Part of the practice is allowing for inconvenience, letting the mud get on the rug. It's a practice of letting bedtime sometimes be less important than practicing reverence. It's about making time for the experience of wonder. Carson says that even if you are a parent that doesn't feel that they have a whole lot of knowledge about nature that you can share with your child, that there are still things you can do. You can still look. You can listen. You can feel. She says this, "You can look up at the night sky, its dawn and twilight beauties, its moving clouds, its stars by night. You can listen to the wind, whether it blows with majestic voice through a forest or sings a many-voiced chorus around the eaves of your house or the corners of your apartment building. And in the listening, you can gain magical release for your thoughts. You can still feel the rain on your face and think of its long journey, its many transmutations from sea to air to earth. To look, listen, and feel with a practice of reverence means to look, listen, and feel with a practice of openness, say, rather than of objectification or any sense of commodification or possession. Practicing reverence is about connection and relationship. It's not about control. It's more of a recognition of something beyond our control, but to which we are nonetheless connected and related. Reverence is not, I think, about deference. Reverence is the practice of openness to wonder and to awe. And we need more practicing of reverence in our lives. Paul Woodruff believes that reverence saves lives. On this Earth Day Eve, it feels important to say that reverence of nature and earth will save lives. On the large scale, a practice of reverence could help us to set aside any practice of exploitation or domination or control. And at the community level and at the level of the individual, practicing reverence is, I think, a source for resilience. In Amy Nezuka Matatil's book, World of Wonders, she shares stories of how again and again, when she encounters racist microaggressions, she is able to turn to nature as a resource for resilience. She is fascinated by nature, and it is full of wonder for her. And that connection with the natural world, that practice of being open to that fascination, gives her resources for the navigation of her life. For example, she shares how at one point, when she was a child living with her mother in Kansas, the walk that she and her sister took every day to their mother's office took her past many catalpa trees. She remembers the interest that her mother took in her and her stories about the dramas of her day and her sister's day at school, and those experience of the trees and experience of her mother kind of blend together. She's able to adapt a kind of wonder at the ability that her mother had to shift from what she was experiencing at work to paying attention to her kids. Amy took a peek in her mother's journal when she was at work sometimes, and from there found out that her mother was regularly facing racism from the patients that she was working with. They're living on the grounds of a mental institution, a mental hospital at this time. Connecting with her wonder for the trees helps her to connect with their wonder with her mother. And as she's telling this story, she shares that where she works now, where she teaches in Mississippi, there are catalpa trees again around her. So when she's walking to class, one of the trees that she passes by is the largest catalpa tree in Mississippi. And her ability to be in relationship with that tree, her ability, I think, to connect to the resources that her mother seemed to have, I think enable her to find a feeling of safety and an ability to open in wonder to her students. Here's what she says. The campus catalpa offers up its creamy blossoms to the morning, already sultry and humid at 9 o'clock in the morning. It still stands even through the 2 or 3 tornado warnings we've had just this first windy year of ours in Mississippi. I pass the enormous tree. I make note of which leaves could cover my face entire if I ever needed them again, if I ever needed to be anonymous, and shield myself from the questions of, what are you? And where are you from? I keep walking. My students are waiting. My sweet Southern students who insist on calling me ma'am, no matter how much I gently protest. And I can't wait to see their beautiful faces. How does Nezuko Matatil get from the you don't belong here, where are you from kind of microaggressions that she gets as a mixed race South Asian Indian and Filipino person to I can't wait to see their beautiful faces? I think she's leaning into a practice of reverence, which enables her to experience wonder more readily, the wonder of the catalpa tree and her wonder at her own mother's resilience. Reverence is a practice of opening to an experience of connection and interdependence in wonder and awe, and that experience, that practice can hold us. It can ground us. It can be a practice for our well-being. Without reverence, we're too likely to get out of well relationship. What I wish is that there was some magic formula that would all of a sudden have people nurturing in themselves a practice of reverence. I can think of a few world leaders, I think, who need to practice some more reverence. I share Nezuko Matatil's frustration when she sees people littering at the beach, on the highway, at Niagara Falls. Don't you see, she exclaims, we are all connected. They're not practicing reverence. And eventually, failing to practice reverence is just going to use everything up. Paul Woodruff, who understands reverence as a virtue, notes that a remarkable feature of virtues is that you cannot argue people into having them when they do not. Is it possible to persuade or encourage or entice people into the practice of reverence? Woodruff says, values are cultivated over time and they have the greatest lasting power in close-knit communities. So what we need then are close-knit communities of practice that welcome people into practice. Rachel Carson says that when you're trying to help build a child's capacity for wonder, that it is not half so important to know as to feel. And Woodruff, himself wondering about how to get people to do a little bit more reverence, wonders about using art rather than argument. Art speaks the language of reverence better than philosophy does, he says. I think it also needs to be true that our faith, our religion, speaks the language of reverence better than philosophy does. Carson says that what's important is to pave the way for the child to want to know. It's more important to do that, to pave the way for the child to want to know, than to put him on a diet of facts he's not ready to assimilate. So what we need is to create space and time together for close-knit communities of practice. That sounds like congregational life to me. The practice of reverence, the practice of feeling connection, the practice of being open to awe and wonder all around us. The poet M. Scott Momaday writes, "We humans must revere the earth, for it is our well-being. Always the earth grants us what we need. If we treat the earth with kindness, it will treat us kindly. If we give our belief to the earth, it will believe in us." If we give our belief to the earth, it will believe in us. There is no better blessing than to be believed in. There are those who believe that the earth is dead. They are deceived. The earth is alive and it is possessed of spirit. Consider the holy tree. It can be allowed to thirst. It can be cut down. Worst of all, it can be denied our faith in it, our belief. But if we speak to it, if we pray, it will thrive. This Earth Day, may we be remembered not to shy away from the practice of reverence. May our practice of reverence be a resource for resilience and wholeness of spirit as we experience the grief and loss that comes with life and living. May we not deny the earth our faith and belief in it. May we have the courage not to deny our faith and belief in ourselves. May we grow a close-knit community of practice that helps us to feel and experience our connection with the web of life. May we learn to practice reverence. We honor the interdependent web of all existence. With reverence for the great web of life and with humility, we acknowledge our place in it. Amen.